thinking of a slump. Sooner or later, every sales rep is going to have a slump, which is simply a period of time when nothing seems to go right. No sales are coming in. You start getting worried, depressed, anxious, fearful. You have bills to pay. There's a certain amount of anxiety involved in this. It happens to everybody. It's not just sales, of course. Sport teams have slumps. First they're winning, then nothing's going right, nothing happens. Every professional racer, musicians, artists, they have writer's block when they're a writer. This happens to everybody. So this is a pretty universal topic. I'm, of course, going to focus it more towards sales because that's what the task at hand is for us. So I've come up with a number of ideas that I've kind of like devised or compiled or whatever to kind of give you a toolkit that will give you a solution to that problem once and for all. In here somewhere is your answer. Number one, create your own reality. Simple fact is that what you call reality is a perception that you have. Everybody's reality is different. Reality is not something firm and fixed in the universe. Reality is something you carry around between your ears that changes all the time. Your reality might be that you're hungry and then you eat. Now you're not hungry. Your reality might be you're cold. And then you turn on the heat and you're no longer cold. You know, your reality is not fixed. It's changing all the time. Since reality, quote unquote, is malleable and changing, why be a victim of a random reality? It's like the reality is not like the weather where you can't change the weather. If you don't like that it's cloudy out, you can't just think real hard and watch the clouds go away. You don't have that power. But with reality, you actually do have that power. You can actually change your reality, and you could do it immediately. The reality, for instance, could be that I can't sell anything. Nobody wants to buy the product. I'm not sure if this job's for me. Nothing's going right. Everybody says no to me. All I get is objections. If you don't like that reality, you have to make a decision that you're not going to put up with this reality. You're going to change it. And one technique specifically is this. And the best way to explain this is in a story. I was working at AllData. I was selling CD-ROM information systems. It cost about $18,000 to all the repair businesses. I was on a job about 3 or 4 months. I sold a few initially, and then I hit this massive slump, and really wasn't that good at the job yet. And the economy was really bad, and this was during the first Gulf War. And nothing, everything was completely dead. This is in Detroit, actually, and between the line and the sand, the first bomb, and everything kind of froze still. The whole economy could have stood still. In the meantime, I had a family support. I didn't have time for a war. I need to make some sales. So I looked at the situation. I go, there's nothing going on. I can't do nothing. I go, I'm not putting up with this. I hate this. So what I did is I was in a parking lot. I was about to walk in and do a presentation. And I have to carry my computer and a monitor and all this other stuff with me. I decided that I'm going to play a little game with this. I'm going to pretend that exactly the opposite was the situation, that I was so busy, I couldn't keep up with demand. I'm selling things left and right. So I loosened my tie, muscled my hair up, undid a button. I bang on the door. I have all this equipment in my hand. I go, I can't believe this. Is this, let me in. I said, what? I go, I'm Paul with AllData. I know you want to see this equipment. I'm here to show it to you. I can't believe my boss. This is crazy. What are you talking about? He says, I have 30, 40 people all over the state that he expects me to go and demonstrate this to. I'm only one person. I can't possibly get to everybody. I says, I know it's not your problem. I'm sorry. So where do I set this up? We'll set up over here. And I told him, I just need to tell you right off the bat. The unit is backordered. I maybe can get you one of these in 2 or 3 weeks. I have to tell everybody the same thing. I can't do anything about it, but I'll still show it to you right now. And the guy goes, wow, really? So I went in there, and usually I do like a 2-hour presentation. I did a 20-minute presentation, and I go, I'll tell you what. Do you want this thing or not? And the guy goes, well, yeah, this is pretty nice. He says, I'm going to put you ahead of the line. I'm going to call right now to Sacramento and see if I can get you one of these in a week instead of 3 weeks. I said, but I need to check, and I need it right now. And I stood there and looked at him. The guy's father was there. The father stood up out of his chair and ran to the desk and tripped over a coffee table, bashed his knee and kept going, wrote me out a check. How much are you ready for? I wrote up to like $1,000. So he wrote it out, handed it to me. And in 25 minutes, I walked out with a sale. That's when I figured out that you can change any reality you want. And at this point, I'd like to open it up for comment.
It's your attitude.
It was not my attitude. Attitude's a whole other thing. Had nothing to do with my attitude. But that's another talk. What happened there?
There was a sense of urgency.
What's the topic of the talk today?
Getting out of a slump.
Okay, what is this first topic here? It's called creating my own reality, right?
Right.
That should give you a hint where I was going with that.
Got it.
Okay? It wasn't about attitude, it wasn't about whatever else was said. Okay? All right, step number one, if you're going to play ball with me, if you're going to be in my ring here, turn on your brain first. Okay? Engage a few neurons before you talk with me. You understand what I'm saying? Because mine are firing. Think. That's how you get good at thinking. You think really hard. What was I doing again? So I'm going to start over. What did I do?
Created your own reality.
And how did I do that?
You changed your methodology to get yourself out of the way you were doing things previously.
I faked it. I pretended. I used the simplest things of all. When you were a kid, did you ever pretend you were the army or cowboys and Indians or astronauts or whatever, that you were building a fort and you were a knight? You ever pretend before? This is something that kindergartners literally are better at than you are right now, because you're just too far away from it. Which is the advantage, by the way, if you have young kids at home, you stay in touch with that part of things. You watch your 7, 8, 9-year-old play, and oh yeah, I remember that. No, they're just totally immersed in their own reality, which they change at a moment's notice. They're creating miracles right before your eyes. Miracles. Your answer was right there, little kids, okay? And watch how innocent, and watch how they pretend. Can you do that? You know what I'm saying? We should have a field trip, and I'll just, you know, run us a place where I'll play forts and throw pillows at each other. And we'll take turns being the knight in shining armor. I mean, that's literally what you could do. What I did, simply, was I pretended that the opposite of my current reality existed, and then what happened?
You made him believe that the product was in such demand, he had to get it right there on the spot.
Who's this?
John.
Okay, John. You have one of the largest brains in the animal kingdom, right?
Correct.
You're using less than a sparrow's worth right now.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, right? Really? Seriously? All right, think. I know you're capable of thinking a higher level on that, because a chimpanzee can do what you just did. You know what I'm trying to say? Let me start over again. I pretended that the opposite of my situation was reality. And then what happened after the end? Did I get a check?
Yeah.
What was my reality at that point?
You get out the sale that you want it.
My reality is now is that I'm selling things. And by the way, 3 months later, I was the number one rep in the whole country. I sold deal after deal after deal after deal after deal. That was not a fluke. That was the new me. That was my new reality speaking. But then again, I've been playing these games since I was 17 years old, and I'm really good at them. I've been modifying my own reality over and over again in many different ways. That's why, you know, this is beyond what normally you would call advanced sales training. I completely created my own reality from scratch. I made a decision on the spot in a parking lot, and within 60 seconds of making that decision, I was on stage performing. And in 25 minutes after, I had a check in my hand, and I sold the system. And you know what I did later that day? I took the day off and went screwing around at the beach. Because I had a check in my hand. Why bother working hard, right? The fact is that I sold another deal later that afternoon. And then I sold about 2 or 3 more deals later that week. Quota was 2 deals a month. And I never looked back. I just kept selling, and everybody else was in the middle of a recession. I was in Detroit in the middle of a depression during the war. course, nobody's buying anything, right? I refuse to participate in a recession. I says, you can have your recession, but it's not my recession, it's your recession. I refuse to participate. During the dot-bomb collapse in San Francisco, just after the bottom fell out, we launched this internet startup. And while everybody was leaving the city and going back to live in their mother's basement in Iowa, where they came from, right? All those MBA biz dev guys were a dime a dozen, and all the tech people were all unemployed. And everybody was auctioning off their equipment. We were buying it. They were leaving the office space. We were renting it. They were laying off people we were hiring. Why? Because I was doing that. That was the reality I created there. And in 18 months, we were doing $2 million in sales a month from nothing, with no venture capital, no loans, nothing. Purely sales, everybody's commission only, including me. Why? Because that's what I was going to do. That was my reason. And that's just an inkling of what you can do. And there's been people on this planet who've done a little bit more than I have in that regard. This is just a taste. Your little problem right now of being a sales rep and being in a slump, it's almost like listening to a kindergartner tell me how the little girl with the pink dress wouldn't play with you. Out to the kindergarten, that's a big crisis. You said hi, and she didn't say hi back, or she wouldn't share a sandwich, and she wouldn't push you on the swing, right? My little girl used to that. Well, to them, that's a huge problem. And to someone operating in a higher level, your problems sound like that. They're real, and we'll respect them as being real, but they're almost childlike. Your situation actually is extremely easy to fix. So I'm going to go on. Number two, here's a methodology. You need to change your environment. You need to immerse yourself in a completely different environment. Here's how you stop smoking. Number one, you add up all the reasons why you don't want to smoke. Cigarettes cost too much. You're going to get lung cancer. You can't breathe as good as you used to. You can't run. Your endurance isn't there. You burn all your clothes stink. You burn a hole in the headlight of your car. Ask me how I know all these. You know what I mean? You finally decide you can't smoke in airplanes, can't smoke here, can't smoke there. It becomes you're like a social pariah, so you finally decide to quit. So here's what you need to do. You can't hang around with anybody that smokes, or you'll smoke. That's just it. If you want to quit drinking, you can't go to bars anymore. If you want to stop using recreational drugs, you can't be following the Grateful Dead in your little hippie dance anymore. No more tie-dye for you. Get the idea? You can't do that. So what you need to do is you need to immerse yourself in the opposite environment. No more negative, nihilistic, punk rock, whatever kind of music that just, glorifies death and destruction and despair and nihilism. You have to immerse yourself in a more uplifting, inspirational environment. Any ones you choose, books, movies, people. You can't hang around with people. I think it's Zig Ziglar. Is it Brian Zig Ziglar? I think he says you can't soar with eagles if you're scratching with the turkeys. Or is that Brian Tracy? One of them guys. You have to immerse yourself in a completely different environment. Go to a night class in college instead of watching TV. Get out of the house. Get off the couch. You know what I'm saying? And just be in with other people and hearing other people. What I did when I was in that slump too is I got Brian Tracy, The Psychology of Sales. And I started playing at my car. And I decided at that point I'm never going to listen to radio again in my life. Because the radio is always gibberish crap. And the only thing I listen to now is occasionally I listen to some intelligent talk radio if I could find it, and usually I don't, so I turn it off. So I literally do not listen to the radio in my car anymore. I'll listen to books on tape or something useful. But I got his tapes, and it's not because everything he did was so brilliant, but in general, the guy was really inspirational. And I met him once because I went to one of the events, and I walked up to the stage when he was signing stuff, and I told him, I says, you tripled my sales overnight, because it kind of helped me refocus. And I had him sign like my business card, and I put it in his tapes. I like him. He's a good guy, Brian Tracy. Nice guy. You have to stop hanging out with losers. Losers are like these clogs in the artery of life who drive 55 in the left lane. They have nowhere to go and all day to get there, and they don't want you to pass them. That's a loser. The analogy is they have nowhere to go in life. They don't have no sense of urgency. They don't care what happens next. They have nowhere to go anyway, but they don't want you to accomplish anything either. That's a loser. A loser is not someone working real hard, trying and doing his best but hasn't achieved his goals yet. That person is automatically a winner. Like on a sales team, I don't care if a person has been around for 3 to 6 months, if they haven't sold anything yet, because people have different learning curves. But if they're trying and they're fighting the good fight, they're winners in my eyes. These are courageous people. Okay, I see fat people, quote unquote, on the trails when I'm running. I'm not fat. I could very easily be fat if I didn't run, which is why one of the reasons why I like to run. But when I look at that fat person, I don't see, oh, look at that fat ass, oh, what a loser. I see a courageous individual who, even though they're overweight, is running on a trail, not some little park, on the trails, the hard trails, sweating, and they're doing something about it. That person, it took me a while to get to that point, too. My first reaction, like everybody else, oh, wow, look at that, oh, fat. You know, that's how your cultural programming does, too. I look at him right now, I go, hey, how you doing? Huh? Good for you, you know, that's raw courage. Anybody in shape who runs, so what? Okay? That's courage. That's the kind of person, hang out with that person, because even if you're in better shape there, that person might have more will than you have, or they're getting it. Anyway, you get the idea there, change your environment. Number three, which is appropriate to what I was just saying, is physical exertion. You're in a slump, you get into a lethargic state, you have apathy, you have defeatism, you have this kind of like negative depression which weighs onto you and literally slows you down. It literally can slow your metabolism down where everything turns gray. Ask me how I know this. As an aside, the reason I know these things is I probably screwed up everything you'd possibly screw up in life. I've probably done at least once, if not more, once. That's how you learn stuff. The reason I'm so good at sales, I like to say, is because I've made more mistakes than everybody else combined. Because I try new things. And I just do what works more. Physical exertion. You need to engage in rigorous activities. Rigorous activities are activities that end up, you have muscle aches, you sweat. You get dirty, and preferably outdoors because you want to be in the cold, you want to be in the heat. Just the exposure to the elements is more than most people get anymore because they always isolate themselves in, okay? But away from the all, you know, uncomfortable feelings. Stop trying to be constantly comfortable and instead embrace effort, sweat, and pain. You want to make them your friends. You literally want to embrace that pain. Because what that'll do is it'll make you hard, okay? And sometimes what you need is just a swift kick in the ass to break a slump. You just need to double it down. You know what to do. You just need to go out and do it. But you became too comfortable. I refer you to my other talk on being comfortable, which I spent an hour and a half on. And it's on this site. I'll refer you to that for more. Number four is the power of anger. I want you to think about it. You've been on a job for a while. You're working your ass off. You're trying to help people. You're doing prospecting. You're asking good questions. You know that the person needs this. You know they should buy it, and yet they're not buying. They're stalling you. They're making up objections. You know, they don't want to make an investment. I mean, you should rightfully be pissed off because you're not getting paid. If you're in commission sales, you're working for free now. You're trying to help people, and you ain't getting yours. You should get mad. You should get extremely mad. The problem is people aren't allowed to be mad in our culture. Being mad is bad. Showing your emotions. Our culture right now is almost like a nanny culture. There's too much female influence. Being male is almost illegal. And one of the male emotions is being able to show, you know, anger and aggression. And these traits are there for a reason. They're called survival traits. If we have them, you can bet your ass that 2 million years of evolution decided that it was necessary for our survival to have these traits. Why? Because you may need them to get yourself out of a survival situation. Okay? Fight or flight. Well, being in a slump and being threatened with your economic survival and being pushed out of the middle class into a lower class welfare-dependent subsistence existence is not going to be a pretty picture. You have got to have some kind of success or you have to switch jobs, which isn't easy either. It's hard to make a living nowadays. You have a global economy, hyper-competitive everywhere. It's hard to find any kind of job, let alone get ahead of the shoe shine and stay middle class. So you should be mad. You need to reawaken what's in you in your DNA, and you need to get that anger working for you. The power of anger is not to have rage at passersby, but to focus your anger for not getting what you know you deserve. You need to get mad enough to get that. And how do you do that? You need to get back in touch with your emotions. You need to literally practice getting mad. I've talked to a lot of people, go to them on purpose to see if I can get some kind of an emotional reaction out of them, and they're still passive. Well, I guess you're right, Paul. And I'm sitting there calling them posers and yelling at them, trying to see if I can get a reaction out of them. Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. You know, this is a person who's lost his spark for life, who can't defend himself, who when a prospect says, hey, you know, I'll think about it. Okay, call me next week. Okay, I'll call you next week. Thank you. Now, here we are in the wilderness, okay, and we're starving to death. And there's this big buck deer, right, and we're trying to, you know, to kill this thing so we can eat and feed 10 other people. We're all going to starve to death, right? And the deer starts, like, fighting because it doesn't want to die and become meat. And you go, okay, you don't want to die. You go, I'll come back next week. Maybe we'll kill you then and eat you, right? And next week the deer comes back and everybody's dead. They're dead, starved to death, lying on the ground because what's-his-face is not a hunter anymore. You need to literally practice getting mad. You need to go outside somewhere and practice screaming and shouting and swearing and just really, you know, letting it loose until you get good at it again. You ever see Full Metal Jacket? There's a scene in there where Private Joker is going toe-to-toe with Arlie Ermey, the sergeant, who's carving him up. And he says, let me hear your war cry. Goes, that's not a war cry. This is a war cry. He lets one loose. It almost takes the skin off his face. I'll try it again, he says. And so he screams again. This time he screams a lot better. Lots better. Work at it, he said. Work at it. He liked that. The guy, he did good. You know, he stood up. He took a punch to the gut. And he came back with a pretty decent war cry. Now, that's good sales training. I highly recommend you see that movie. It's on my website under movies, Full Metal Jacket. So let me hear your war cry. You don't have a war cry because our civilization doesn't want you to have a war cry. They want you to stand in line and go work at the factory or work at your desk. You know, keep a low profile. Get along to get along. That's great if you want to be a little worker bee, but now you're trying to be an entrepreneur. It's not going to help you here. You need to learn how to do that. Number five is reframing. It's a psychological term. Reframing is taking a situation and reinterpreting it in your mind. Like, I'm in a slump. Everything is horrible. No one's ever going to buy this product. I made a big mistake taking this job. My buddy was right. He said, don't work there. Nobody want to buy that. All those people said, nah, your price is too high. They were all right. I could have sworn this is a good company and a good team and a good product. I must have been wrong and nothing's working. And I guess I should start looking for work again, try over again. In other words, they're looking for easy money somewhere else where it's not going to exist, right? They're on one plot of ground trying to make stuff grow, and it doesn't grow, so they look across the street and say, well, I'll walk over there and plant some seeds. It's probably easier over there. No, it's not the same dirt. You're going to have to work your ass off and dig holes over there, too. And shovel cow shit all over it. It's called manure. That's a fun job. So they have something called cognitive therapy. Let me save you tens of thousands of dollars in psychologist bills and tell you how this works in about 5 seconds. Give me a minute or two. Cognitive therapy means, and this is a fancy word, this is why they charge $150 an hour for $10 an hour advice. Because they'll package it, that piece of shit, in a nice box with a bow on it. Cognitive therapy just simply means thinking. Cognitive therapy means you're fixing your mind by thinking. Oh, that's real complicated. I mean, I can actually think through a problem? Yeah, you can. And here's how it works. Number one. How long has the company been in business again? We'll take an example. Fortis, 8 years. Okay. How many customers do they have? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, anywhere from a couple hundred grand to $12 million recovered. And what kind of revenue are they getting? About $50 million a year. Are there salespeople making money? Absolutely. There's people making over $1 million a year in the company. How many people in the company? About 85 people, highly skilled lawyers, CPAs, professionals. Has the tax code changed in the past? And it's changed in the past. They adapted. It's changing now. They'll adapt to that too. Are other people currently selling? Yes, they are. So your idea that nobody wants the product, that the price is too high, that you can never do it, these are people with no more skill than you. Obviously, you need to reframe the situation because you're wrong. What you did there is you listed all these fears and doubts and all this nonsense became real to you when really it wasn't. If you sat down with anybody like a coach, a life coach or a business coach and explained to them the situation, they probably look at you and go, now, who's the hiring guy again, the guy who's the sales manager? What's his number? Because I want to go work there, you idiot. You mean you can make $100,000 a month and you're sitting there whining and they're offering you training two or three times a week? They have people help you close your deals and you're whining, you want to go back to Craigslist to get a $20,000, $30,000 a year job? Are you insane? Okay. Anyway, maybe you should reframe. Maybe you'll reframe things, you'll find out the job really isn't any good. But anyway, what it is you have to actually look at your perceptions and do perception checking. Get a piece of paper and write these things out. Now, is this true or false? Okay. The fact is, you can help yourself. Why did you want to sell it in the first place? Because it was a really good product. You checked out. How will it help the prospect? Would you buy it yourself? If it comes out all positive, the problem is not the product, the company, and the job. The problem is somewhere else. That's what cognitive therapy can help you correct. It can help you think through things where, as we've seen on my calls, people just don't know how to think anymore. And the reason they can't think is because they don't engage in rigorous conversation. They engage in chit-chat and gossip. But they don't debate the issues anymore. They don't actually talk about something meaningful. They watch television all day long as a hypnotic trance. And so gradually we've lost the ability to think. And, you know, that's the nature of our culture nowadays. So when you need to think, it's not there anymore. So a lot of people need this kind of practice again to learn how to do this. So reframing is simply repositioning your brain that, oh my God, is it cold out? It's freezing. Well, what's the temperature? Oh, it's like 52. What? It's 52. Now, this is January, and I'm in California talking to someone I know in Detroit. And I go, what the hell is wrong? What do you mean 52 is freezing? When you were living in Detroit, we used to go swimming when it's 52 degrees. It's now 8 below zero. Well, you know, I'm used to having 65 degree weather and sunny, but now it's 52 and rainy. So what does cold mean? Cold is a relative thing. It's a value judgment on a physical property. The temperature is X. That represents, you know, basically the amount of molecular motion is your temperature. If you reach absolute zero, there is no more molecular motion. So at 52 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever, it's just, you know, it's a state. It doesn't mean anything by itself. One person might be hot, another person might be cold. I mean, is the sun too bright, too dim? Do you like the rain or don't like the rain? Who cares? These are all personal interpretations. And they're malleable, flexible, and changeable. When you reframe something, you simply take it and say, instead of saying, oh my God, it's cold out, it's 52, say, oh, 52 is pretty nice. You know, it could be 22, but that would be cold. So 52 is actually pretty balmy, so I'm going to go outside and run anyway. So I take the temperature and I reframed it in my mind, comparing it to other things. Relative to 22, you know, it's warm. So if a customer says, $20,000, oh my God, that's a lot of money. Yes, it is a lot of money. But compared to what it'll do for your business, it's a good investment then, isn't it? Well, yeah, I guess it is. I mean, and you invested all times of time in your business. You bought this machine and this equipment, hired that person over there, bought a new building. You're constantly investing in your business. What's your main concern, isn't it, to make sure that your investments are well-placed and that you're putting your money to best effect. Is that right, sir? Well, does this qualify? Yes, well, then there you go. See, the idea that $20,000 is a lot of money or any price for any product is a lot of money is totally meaningless. I could say I have a car. $10,000. Is that a lot of money for a car? Yes, no. I need a volunteer from the audience. We're going to play a little game here. Don't get ahead of me, then get cute. Who wants a volunteer? Who is this?
Heather.
Heather, is $10,000 a lot of money for a car? Yes or no?
No.
Well, yes it is. The car is a piece of crap. It's a complete piece of junk. It has a burnout engine, no wheels or tires. It looked like it was vandalized in the ghetto. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was a two-year-old Rolls-Royce that's in perfect condition, but I'm going through a divorce, and just to piss off my wife, I'm going to sell it for $10,000 and then push the receipt in her face. Say, here's your Rolls-Royce. I sold it for $10,000. There's nothing against that, by the way. There's no law against that until after your divorce. So is $10,000 a lot of money for that car, yes or no?
For the Rolls-Royce, no.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. So thank you very much, Heather. The point being is that the $10,000 as a number means nothing. It has to have context, right?
Right.
So all things that have value judgments like high, low, old, young, smart, dumb, fat, thin, rich, poor, all these things are value judgments that are arbitrary, all of which can be reframed. Good job, bad job, easy to sell, hard to sell. These are all value judgments. These are your interpretation of reality that you're imposing on the reality. The reality is just what it is. Other people are selling a product. Why are you saying it's so hard to sell? Get the idea? So that's the gist of reframing. Okay, method number six. Again, we're talking about ways to break a slump. And this one is easy. It appears to be the easiest of all the methods. On the one hand, on the other, it could be considered the most advanced. It's simply sitting down and doing nothing at all. That sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? Heather?
Yes?
Since you're fast with the mute button there, fast. I want you to sit and do absolutely nothing. That's easy, isn't it?
Yes, should
okay.
be.
Well, what we're going to do is it's called meditation. You're going to sit in silence, and here's what you do. It's real simple to meditate. You cannot stop your thoughts. You can't think nothing. Try right now to sit in silence and then don't think about anything. It's a physical impossibility. You might as well say, sit there and don't breathe. You cannot breathe for a while, correct, Heather?
Right.
But for how long?
I'm not quite sure. Not breathing?
Yeah, why don't you try that out and tell us how it works, okay?
Yeah.
Now, with your motivation, you should be able to go a good 8-9 minutes. But then you'll be as dumb as the other people who can't operate their mute switch. It's all you'll have killed half the brain cells in your head and brought yourself down to average, okay? You have to sit there and not think. Is that possible? No.
No,
it's not possible. It sounds easy, but it's literally impossibly difficult. Therefore, what we need to do is get more motivated and have a better positive attitude and keep trying and trying, trying anyway until we can eventually maybe somehow do it. Is that right, you guys? Who talked to me about attitude earlier? Who mentioned the word attitude? Come on.
Jim.
Yeah. I need a better attitude, right? Because if I had a better attitude, I'm not playing with you personally here, but if I had a better attitude, I would be able to sit there and think of nothing, correct?
No.
But how about a really, really positive attitude, and I have surrounded around me the various holy books and objects of my life. Okay, all the deities are on my side on this one. I'm trying to think of it. You ready? Nope, it's not working. How about if I try harder, just really do it more rigorously? In other words, it ain't gonna happen, correct, Jim?
Yeah, you can't hold two thoughts at the same time.
Well, in this case you can't not hold any thought. The point is this. You want to clear your mind and to meditate, that's the definition, but you can't not think. So here's how you do it. Here's the answer. You simply do not resist the thoughts whatsoever. If you resist them, you're attaching to them. And if you attach them, they won't go away. It's like you've grabbed on them, attached yourself to them. But if you seize all resistance, the thought will come in, it'll on its own accord drift out, and right behind it will come another thought. But you don't care anymore because you're not trying to prevent the thoughts from coming to your mind, because that's how amateurs try to meditate and fail. you let the thought leave again. And after a while, you get really good at just letting the thought come in, letting the thought comes out, and guess what happens? They stop coming into your mind because it doesn't work. Just nothing happens, so they just basically stop. And for long periods of time, you will actually be thinking of nothing, and you will experience a state where only the now exists. And that's called meditation. So what I want you to do now is, in all these thoughts of yours of defeatism and depression and negativity and I can't do this and this won't work and all these, you're driving yourself crazy because you're thinking too much. I want you to sit down and meditate and just let the thoughts come in and let them go again. And let them go in, let them go in. And pretty soon what will happen is any of these thoughts that come in your mind, eventually after you do this for a week or two or a month, I've been doing it for a lot of years, they just go away again. They find nothing to hold on to. It's like your brain is made out of Teflon covered with silicone spray or grease or something. They just don't have anything to attach on. You just refuse to acknowledge those thoughts as your thoughts. They are a thought. Those thoughts exist, but they don't belong to you. They're not yours, and they don't attach to me. I just don't let almost any thought attach to me. Oh, I'm wonderful. I'm better than everybody else. There's a negative thought in a way, right? Even if it's a so-called positive, I don't own that thought. It doesn't own me. It's not my thought. It came into my head, and I'm letting it go back out again. It's like some people keep walking into my house and out the back door. They don't live there. Somehow they just got their way in, and they found their way out again. As you master this, you can also, what happens is that you let your internal demons come and go. They're coming now anyway. The trick is to open the door again so they can exit. They'll no longer dominate and control your mind. You recapture control and power and become the master of your mind. All these inner demons that are preventing you from doing things, that are dragging you down, they're dissipating your energy, are not you. They are thoughts, and you don't have to own these thoughts anymore. You can just let them go. It's like passive resistance.